Welcome to Diabetes Deconstructed, a podcast for people interested in learning more about diabetes. I'm your host, Dr. Rita Kalyani at Johns Hopkins. We developed this podcast as a companion to our Patient Guide to Diabetes website. If you want a trusted and easy to understand resource for diabetes or to listen to previous podcasts, please visit hopkinsdiabetesinfo.org. For today's podcast, it is my pleasure to introduce a patient with diabetes, Antonio, who will be sharing his journey living with type 2 diabetes, particularly focused on the effect of diabetes-related peripheral artery disease and its effect on his life. Along with Antonio, we are pleased to welcome Dr. Elizabeth Ratchford, an expert on peripheral artery disease and one of Antonio's care providers. Dr. Ratchford is an associate professor of medicine and the director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Vascular Medicine. Her research and clinical interests include peripheral artery disease, cardiovascular disease prevention, and fibromuscular dysplasia. Welcome, Antonio and Dr. Ratchford.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I have had the pleasure of knowing Antonio for several years now, I guess about three or so. And I guess to get started, first we can talk about the diabetes and then maybe that'll lead us to the PAD. They're closely connected.
Sure. And pleasure for me as well to be part of this program and hopefully be a little bit of help to those listening to us in understanding the diseases. So talking about diabetes, I was diagnosed probably 10, 15 years ago, and it really was totally unexpected. I have no one in my family, direct family, that has had diabetes. In one of my annual physical exams, our family doctor said, well, let's do all your panel analysis, do all the glucose testing. And my A1C came in at about like 7.8 or so. And that was a surprise. So I got a call and say, you know that you have diabetes? Of course, I didn't. And so I came in and we had a conversation about what to do and what kind of medication I needed. And also starting looking at my diet and exercise, see how to address the situation. Fortunately, I don't have to take insulin, so that was good. But I've been primarily taking metformin as the treatment, and that those have to be kind of calibrated with it. I'm now able to maintain my A1C. Still not perfect, but I'm hovering around 6.97. So it's a much more much better, you know, value. I started paying a lot more of attention to my diet, and so no more ice cream and things like those. Also to exercising. The exercising, which I wasn't doing at all, frankly, but the exercising became a bit more part of my routine. I just wasn't truly doing it in a very consistent basis. So I would do it one day, then go a week without doing it. I just wasn't aware of it, the disease before. And so that really was a situation. So I've been able to keep it controlled in that sense, but I certainly have to start paying a lot more attention to my health, to my physical activity, and to my diet. Not that I was doing too many wrong things, but certainly I love ice cream and I like chocolate and all those kinds of things. So I started thinking more about it, you know, shall I have another spoon or not? And maybe the answer is no, you need to stop. So it was a learning day when I realized that I had diabetes and I had, you know, the first question I asked is, can this go away? Can I take care of it? And the answer was, no, you're going to have to be careful and take your medication. And it's okay, you're going to be fine. But you do have to pay attention to it and be serious about it and follow what your doctor is telling you. So that's how it happened.
Yeah, so you're somewhat unique in that in some cases, if somebody has a problem with their weight, then that can get rid of or really significantly decrease the diabetes. But in your case, your weight is in the normal range.
Yeah, I did lose weight. I was not thin, but I was not overweight. And I don't smoke. So I thought I was doing fine until I heard the news.
I think it was several years later, back in maybe 2019, when you first noticed some symptoms in your legs.
Yes. So for a number of years, 10 years or so, I dealt with diabetes. Again, was under control. It started coming down, the A1C. And again, I would like to see it lower than what it is now, which is, as I said, about 7 or so. My doctor keeps saying I need to get to 6.5, but much better. And so I felt fine and was at least taking care of the best I could. But about, as you said, about 3 or so years ago, 2019, I noticed when walking that I started developing a pain in my right leg. And after walking for a little while, I started developing the pain. And initially I thought, oh, this must be, maybe I pulled a muscle or something, because I had no other symptoms whatsoever. So I didn't really pay attention. I just said, oh, this will go away. But it didn't. And with time, and what I mean time is over several months that I kept it, having that symptom. And nothing else on the other leg, on the left leg, was fine. But it didn't go away. I noticed that actually was getting worse. In a period of a few months, 3 months, 4 months, I realized that after walking like for 3 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, I was now developing that pain. And I had to stop, actually, and take a rest. And then I could walk again, but then I had to stop. And my job does require that I walk. And there are, on campus, there are some hills and so on. And so I just felt something is wrong here. So I said, this muscle has not been pulled. It's just taking too long to recover.
That brings up a really important point that a lot of people who develop leg symptoms with walking, or, and it's usually with walking, in fact, when it has to do with the circulation, a lot of people attribute it just to normal aging or arthritis or their back or pulled muscle, like you said. I think it's really important for everybody to be aware that if there is discomfort in the legs that comes on with exercise and is relieved with rest, then that really suggests that there's a problem with the circulation. So the symptoms that you're describing are classic textbook symptoms of what we call claudication. Claudication comes from the Latin word claudicare, which means to limp, which is actually named for the Emperor Claudius, who didn't have peripheral artery disease, which is the topic of today, but he actually had cerebral palsy. So he walked with a limp. People will sort of limp as they go along, and that's because the muscles are not getting enough oxygen. So when you walk uphill is what you described, that requires more oxygen delivery to the muscles. And while when you're sitting still, your muscles are getting enough oxygen, if you start to walk, then they need more. And if you go uphill, then they need even more. And that's the perfect description of what we call vascular claudication. And that is due to the peripheral artery disease, which is blockages in the leg arteries, put simply. And a lot of people ask, what is peripheral vascular disease? Or it has a bunch of different names. But years and years ago, when I was in medical school, it was called peripheral vascular disease. But then over time, that got changed to, first it was peripheral arterial disease, and then it got changed to peripheral artery disease. So the current proper term is peripheral artery disease. That's because vascular refers to both arteries and veins. Peripheral vascular disease is just not specific enough. So the symptoms that you're describing really fit with peripheral artery disease, which is the blockages in the leg arteries. Now that you've described the symptoms, then the next best thing would be to have an ankle brachial index, which is the best test for diagnosing PAD. That's not always the test that gets done next, but that's what should be done. It's where you measure the pressures in the ankles and the pressures in the arms. And the pressure should get higher as you go down the leg, but in PAD, the pressure actually drops because of the blockage in the arteries. So the blood pressures in the arms should also be equal, but you can get blockages in the arm arteries as well, which is really common in people with PAD. So we measure the ankle pressures and divide that by the arm pressure, which gives us a number for each leg. And that would generally be how the doctors would figure out what the diagnosis is. I'm assuming that that's what happened to you.
Yeah. So again, I figured I need to do something about this. So again, I went back to my personal physician and asked her, told her about the symptoms. You must have some problems with your cardiovascular circulation in your legs. So I want you to go to, and I think we did a sonogram study. And so she sent me to a clinic somewhere in town where they do these kinds of tests. And then depending on the results, they can do something about it. So I went for that test, and sure enough, the technician who did them for me came out with the results that I had, I believe, 60% obstruction or something of that range. And so she said, yeah, you need a procedure. This has to be taken care of. I recall that she was telling me that they were already setting up a meeting or a time for me to go in and have this procedure. And it would involve basically, I call it the rotor hood, insert a catheter through my leg and go there and drill away whatever obstacles were there. And maybe there could be a need for a stent and all kinds of things. And I asked, dangerous? Is that a complicated process? And they said, no, there are some dangers, but don't worry. We have a hospital nearby. If there are complications, we'll take you to the hospital, and they are prepared to take care of any emergencies. I said, let me think about this. Because I just all suddenly my life was changing in front of me, and I was hearing all of these concerns and procedures that I had to go through very quickly. And so I came home, I told my wife what was happening, and we agreed that we would go for a second opinion on this. And so I called Dr. Sodhi, who is our eye specialist, and asked him, can you please recommend someone that can go and have this situation analyzed? And that's where he recommended Dr. Ratchford to me. I was so delighted to have that recommendation, because I really, when I went to see you for the first time, I was really a bit scared. Don't get scared easily, but I was. And so that's when we explained what was going on. And of course, you had to redo the tests and do everything that was necessary to really diagnose it. But you told me that, no, you don't have to do that. That's not the best process. And so we're going to do something different. And that's we started on the routine that you can talk about that really make the difference in terms of what I am now versus the situation I was in about 3 years ago.
So you've been a perfect follower of directions as far as your exercise. And the routine that we usually advise is called start-stop exercise, and walk until you get moderate discomfort and stop and rest until it goes away and then start walking again. We usually ask that you bring on the symptoms within the first 5 to 7 minutes of walking. And there are supervised exercise programs and unsupervised exercise programs. But with the pandemic, we've had less and less of the supervised exercise. But sometimes people are able to do it at home if they're really dedicated, and some people need more motivation, so they want to come to a center to do it. But the mechanism and the method is the same depending whether you're at home or in the program in a supervised center. Walk, stop, walk, stop. You bring on the pain to a moderate degree. So on a scale of 1 to 5, it's supposed to get to a 4. So you don't want to be falling over and terrible pain, but you don't want to just stop immediately when the pain comes on, because what you're doing is training the muscles to extract the oxygen better. So people like to think of it as other blood vessels forming, but that's not actually really what happens based on the science behind it, but you're really training the muscles. So one of the other things that happens is if people stop exercising, then they often get back to square one. So if somebody injures their knee and they take a month off from the treadmill, then they might notice that their leg pain is all of a sudden much worse. And then we end up worrying and bringing them in and checking their pressures again. And it turns out that the pressures haven't changed. It's just that the muscles forgot. And some people will actually say that if they even miss one day of walking, that they'll notice a difference. So I personally think it's really important to do that walking every single day, because that's what makes it a habit, so that if you're not doing it, then you feel like something's wrong if you're not exercising. So you've just been a beautiful example of how you can really improve your walking ability by doing that exercise regimen. I don't know if you remember, but the first time we met, you said you could only walk 10 minutes at the most without having to stop. So how has that changed over the years?
Well, it was even worse than that. As I was mentioning earlier, I think about 4 or 5 minutes I had to, which was very traumatic for me. Likes to get things done and get going. You told me a number of things that I try to follow very closely. Was the walking routine, as you mentioned. You also, again, reinforced the need to watch my diet and gave me some examples of diet. Not have too much meat, vegetables, fish, all of that. So I passed all that along to my wife, takes care of all of our meals. In addition to the walking, you also told me to be nice to lose a few pounds. Again, as we discussed earlier, was not a situation where I was overweight, but you did suggest, you know, if you can lose 5 pounds or so in the next 2 or 3 months, that would be really great. So what we did is I went home. The first thing is I gave a lot of credit to my wife, very frankly. She told me, you shall do everything that Dr. Ratchford told you. And so she saw through it. So not only she totally changed the diet and really making sure that we were the right components there, but also she said, I'm going to walk every day and I'm going to walk with you. And every day, either in the morning or in the afternoon, with schedules, we'd go and walk around the neighborhood for about 25, 30 minutes. And sure enough, I was every 3 or 4 minutes, I had to stop because of pain. And so she hadn't really realized that, because we just hadn't really discussed it that much. And so she said, wow, you're really in pain. And said, yeah, I have to stop. I can't continue. So we did that for 2 or 3 weeks. And then I think we got into the colder months of the year. And so I decided that I was going to get a treadmill, which we didn't have one. And so we got a treadmill, put it in our basement. And then I switched primarily to the treadmill as the exercise. And I didn't even know how these things work, that you can increase the speed and you can increase the angle and all of that. So it's really wonderful variations that you can have. We got Netflix, which I really didn't have. And so now I can do my exercise and watch TV and all of that. I truly went into a routine where every day I was either at 6 a.m. or then coming back home from work. I had to go down there for half an hour, and I would do exactly what you had told me to do. So I would go for 4 or 5 minutes, and then I had to stop because of the pain. And then I would rest for maybe a couple of minutes and then restart and do that for a period of time, as I said, half an hour or so. And I started noticing that I was feeling better and better time. Essentially, right now, you know, dial forward about 3 years, I continue to do it. I'm honest, don't do it every day, but I do it 5 times a week or so. I always do it on weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And then during the week, depends on really my schedule. I travel quite a bit, and now I travel with my running shoes and my gym wear. And so I look for hotels that have a fitness center. So even when travel, we go on cruises, and I make sure that I exercise during the cruise as well. By doing that, right now, now I'm able to go easily 20 minutes without stopping. And towards the end of the 20 minutes, I increase the speed. I also start increasing the slope. And when I walk now in the normal activities, I have no pain. I really can now walk across campus and back and forth, and I'm fine. I can climb stairs and not feel any pain. And it's really, really totally changed my life in terms of being able to do what I need to do and do it in a way that I feel, again, comfortable and happy. In addition to that, I did lose weight. You had given me the target of 5 pounds. I actually lost 15 pounds and I've maintained it. When I come to see you or any other, and they ask me, what's your weight? Let's weigh you in. I said, I know what the weight is because that's what it is. And I'm usually within pound or so of the previous weight. So I've been able to maintain the weight. I'm walking, I'd say, normal. And in the cruises that we take, we go into these excursions and you walk all day and I'm fine. I can do that and truly not impact my lifestyle anymore.
That's great. I think that the weight loss issue is something that is not talked about a lot with regard to PAD treatment in our vascular world, but I think it really deserves mention because if you think of, you know, well, as I mentioned, walking uphill, it requires more oxygen. But if you were never that overweight, but if you could imagine if you had 25, 30 or 40 pounds of extra weight, then it would be like if you put on a 40 pound backpack and you try to walk up the stairs, that is a lot of extra work for those muscles in your leg. I think it's important to note that weight loss can be a really good part of the treatment for the claudication symptoms because it's you're just decreasing the amount of work that your legs have to do with walking. So that's great. You and your wife also, it sounds like she deserves credit for, it's really amazing that you had such good support and a partner to walk with.
And she doesn't let me go away with it. You know, if she will ask me every day, have you exercised today?
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah, no, she does. And that, again, a support system is always very important, as you well know. So again, I would recommend everyone to talk with your spouse, with your mom, dad, whatever. Get someone to watching you and making sure that you are not taking it easy or feeling that, I'm better now, so I don't need to do it. It's half an hour a day, at least 5 days a week as I do it. It's fun. I actually look forward to spending that time in front of the TV. And I know I think many shows now I didn't know before. It's fun. You can do it. And it goes by very quickly. Before you know it, you're done and you go on.
Yeah, that's great. The more distractions you can have, the better when you're walking, because then you're not so focused on the leg. So walking with other people listening to audio, I like to listen to audiobooks and sometimes if watching a show, you can even put subtitles on the show and then listen to music because the music makes you walk faster. And then you're so distracted between the music and the reading the subtitles that then you don't think at all about the leg pain. So there's lots of tips for how to start that and stick with it. But the more distractions, the better. And I like to think of it as a special sort of quiet time that you get to yourself where it's prescribed. Yeah. So it's kind of a requirement from a medical perspective. And it's also like a blood pressure medication because it has such exercise has such beneficial effects on cholesterol, the diabetes and the glucose and the blood pressure. And from a mental health standpoint, especially, you know, now with all the stress that people have been under over the past few years, I think having that time to yourself where you're not being bombarded by, you know, news or emails or work or laundry or dishes, depending on how you spend your time. It's nice to have that half hour that's protected where you can just kind of do something that you want to do, because it should be a treat. A big component of the treatment of peripheral artery disease is the medications. I like to think of it like everything that we do is either aimed at making you feel better or live longer. And a lot of the medicines are aimed at, some of them are aimed at both of those things. But for example, the blood thinners, we use usually aspirin, but there's actually a new medication that I think you and I haven't even talked about yet, but rivaroxaban has become kind of a standard treatment to add to aspirin now for some patients with peripheral artery disease at a very low dose to thin the blood to prevent heart attack and stroke. And then I know that in some of the other discussions that you guys have had with the podcast, you've covered the cardiovascular disease in general, but statins are really, really important and probably the most important medication for treatment of peripheral artery disease. There's even some studies that show that statins can improve the walking ability, but those are some really old studies which will never be replicated because it's really not ethical at this point to deprive somebody with PAD of a statin because the reduction in rates of heart attack, stroke, and death actually are huge. So the statin is just really, really critical. Even though the on a day-to-day basis, of course, the walking and weight loss and diet and everything are really important, but the medications are really key to keep the arteries open. And there's also some blood pressure medications that are particularly helpful in reducing that cardiovascular risk because there is an overlap. Obviously, if you have blockages in the leg arteries, then you can have blockages in the arm arteries or in the neck arteries or in the heart arteries. And the whole purpose of these medications is really to prevent heart attack and stroke because usually the legs are fine. It is also worth mentioning, luckily you didn't need to undergo an invasive procedure, but there are some times when an invasive procedure like a balloon and stent or even bypass surgery is necessary, but there's only very rare circumstances in which that occurs. And that would be if you had pain at rest. Like every time you come, I always say, have you had any sores on your feet? Do you have any pain in your feet at night when you sleep? And those are, if you have gangrene or a sore on the foot that's not getting better or pain at rest at night, for example, things, those are kind of alarm symptoms that we worry, okay, is the circulation getting worse? And do we need to restore the blood flow to the leg? Because we certainly want to avoid things like amputations, which and the amputation rates are actually much higher in patients with diabetes. In fact, 50% of amputations that occur in the United States are in patients with diabetes. So taking good care of the feet is really important. And then checking that circulation is key. And if there is some kind of a wound, it needs to be addressed right away. And then also, if your symptoms hadn't gotten better with the exercise regimen, then if the symptoms are what we call lifestyle limiting, then we would recommend, if you wanted it, you know, the balloon and stent procedure. But that's really just to make you feel better, not so much the live longer part of it. I used to work in New York City and we measured everything in terms of city blocks. So if you were a mailman in New York and you couldn't deliver the mail and you weren't able to do your job, then that would be after 3 months of doing this exercise regimen, if you couldn't deliver the mail anymore, then we would consider doing the invasive procedures. We talk a lot about city blocks, and if you can increase your walking ability from 2 blocks to 5 blocks, then usually that can get you to a Starbucks in Manhattan. So that would be right. That would be enough, so you wouldn't have to have an invasive procedure.
Dr. Ratchford, you mentioned how PAD often goes along with cardiovascular disease and stroke, and I'm just curious, Antonio, did you have any other history of cardiovascular disease at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I do have tendency for high blood pressure. And again, as Dr. Ratchford was saying, keeping the medications and the regimen that was eventually optimized, my blood pressure now, I have days where I know it was like 160 over whatever, 80 or so. Now my blood pressure is typically in 120 to 130 over 70. And so that's good. But no, I did not have any alert that this was a problem. Again, the key issue was that as I was walking, I started having the developed, and it kind of happened overnight. I was fine one day, and then the next day I'm walking, and I start feeling this pain, and I said, what's going on? That's what led me to say, maybe I just sprained a muscle or something. This should
Can go. You describe the pain for our listeners that you had, where it was located and what it felt like?
It was located on my leg, in the back, lower part of the leg, in the calf area. You almost felt like something getting very tense and then hard, and you just see this acute pain coming onto your leg, and you just had to stop. You just could not continue. And then you stop, and then say, 2 or 3 minutes, then it would go away. It's interesting now that when I'm exercising on the treadmill, I might start feeling the pain, let's say after 10 minutes, 12 minutes. But what I'm finding is that it may come, but then it goes away without me needing to stop. You see it kind of coming, but then it just vanishes away. And I can typically go, as I said, 20 minutes and or longer without having to stop at all. Because even if it develops, it's very manageable and doesn't force me to stop the exercise.
Sounds like it could be tremendously disabling if it's, you know, occurring quite often. And I'm so glad to hear that with the exercises Dr. Rochford gave to you, that your pain has improved. Dr. Rochford, I'm curious, what are the risk factors for PAD? And, you know, why might someone with diabetes develop PAD and not the other cardiovascular diseases, for instance? Just curious if we have any insight based on, Antonio, what you shared with us.
Age is the most important risk factor for PAD, and we can't control that, so we don't focus too much on it. But the other, the two most important risk factors are diabetes and smoking. Smoking is really, really a critical risk factor, and you're twice as likely to develop blockages in the leg arteries as you are to develop blockages in the heart arteries if you smoke. But interestingly, smoking tends to cause blockages that are higher up, like in the pelvic arteries, and with diabetes, they're often lower down, like below the knee, which makes them actually harder to fix in patients with diabetes. I think now you have a cardiologist as well, right? So I'm a vascular medicine specialist, I should mention. So I'm not a cardiologist, but I work in cardiology at Hopkins, and I'm also not a surgeon. So I do vascular medicine, which is the non-invasive diagnosis and treatment of blood vessel problems. And PAD is literally my favorite topic. You do have a cardiologist now. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that came about?
It was, again, one of our appointments that you're doing an EKG on me, and you noticed that there was some extra peak or something, which was happening with a certain frequency that was abnormal. And also, you thought that at some point, I might have had some sort of a similar to a heart attack or something like that, because signals were indicating that. Again, I couldn't remember anything, certainly that happened in that vein. Certainly was a good idea to go and see the cardiologist, which confirmed what you were suspecting. But again, I think 3 years later, with the kind of activity that we have been talking about, now my EKGs and there is even an echocardiogram and so on, they are starting to show much better functioning in the heart. And I think the last one we did a few months ago, I believe you used even some sort of better functionality in the heart in terms of the pumping capacity and things like that. So again, to me, these things are all related in some way. I'm just still amazed how a change in my exercise habit and essentially just walking has totally changed my lifestyle. And clearly, physiologically, it's also improved my functions, because certainly it looks like the heart is healthier. It seems to have almost like regenerated itself. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm talking about regenerative medicine here, but it certainly feels like my heart is gotten better, stronger. And I think it's just keeping at it, maintaining your medications and the exercise, and paying attention to your diet. All of that has truly made a major impact on my life.
What about your blood glucose management? You know, I'm just curious what your A1Cs had been like, and Dr. Rochford, do you usually think of glucose management as impacting the risk of developing PAD?
They say, I guess, that the glycemic control affects the microvascular disease more than macrovascular, meaning that it has more effect on the little blood vessels. Certainly having the higher the hemoglobin A1C, the higher the risk of PAD, and there is a direct correlation there. Fortunately for you, your glucose was never completely out of control. But actually, I saw somebody earlier today where their hemoglobin A1C is like 14, and there's a sore on her foot, and she's, you know, heading towards having that balloon and stent procedure. So there's certainly a close connection between the glycemic control of the glucose with the sores and wound healing, and it's all very, very connected. But you've done a really good job of controlling that, I think, over the years.
Again, as I said, I've been paying a lot of attention to the diet, credit my wife, but it doesn't mean that I have truly not skip or eliminate what I like. You know, I'll be honest, I'll have a scoop of ice cream here and there, or eat a piece of chocolate, or if there is a birthday in the family, I'll have a little bit of birthday cake. So I have not eliminated it. What I have certainly paid attention is not abuse the kinds of foods that are really not good for you. We have fish every week, maybe twice a week. I might have steak maybe once a week. Lots of vegetables, fruit as well, and paying attention to the type of food, because some food can have a lot of sugar also.
Dr. Ratchford and Antonio, thank you so much for being here today. And Antonio, especially for sharing your experiences living with PAD and your successes and your challenges along the way. And it's so great to hear about how your work with Dr. Ratchford has really allowed you to live with PAD and continue to have a good function. We really appreciate all your input and candid stories today. So thank you so much, Antonio, for being here, and Dr. Ratchford for your expertise as well.
My pleasure.
Thank you for the invitation.
I'm Dr. Rita Kalyani, and you've been listening to Diabetes Deconstructed, a companion podcast to the Johns Hopkins Patient Guide to Diabetes website. For more information, visit hopkinsdiabetesinfo.org. We love to hear from our listeners. The email address is hopkinsdiabetesinfo@jhmi.edu. Thanks for listening. Be well, and see you next time.